Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Greetings, and welcome to the fourth and final program in what has been a four-part series featuring the story of Laurie Arthur, Melbourne musician who played with many groups, including the one he formed, The Strangers. We learned that despite their universal acclaim, The Strangers were never able to tour overseas because some members had personal commitments that made that impossible. This in turn led to Laurie making the hard decision to leave the group that he formed and to seek another that would be as popular as The Strangers but be able to tour overseas. Always looking for the best musicians, he formed an ad hoc group consisting of some of Melbourne's best artists to fill a need in a music venue that was providing lunchtime shows. Because the group was made up of members of other groups, it took on the name The Mixtures. With Laurie driving the group, he gradually put together a permanent Mixtures that went on to record several singles before Laurie saw that he needed to move out of playing and to manage the group, which was on the verge of greatness. Under Laurie's management, the group went on to record some iconic tracks, such as The Bush Bike Song and In the Summertime. During our talk, Laurie also shares his thoughts on the state of the Australian music scene. He is highly critical of the way music is taught these days, and he shares his method both in sharing his thoughts, but also by demonstrating on guitar. We pick up now with Laurie talking about the recordings he played on whilst in the Mixtures. The Mixtures recorded many tracks over quite a long period of time. What were some of the ones that you were involved in? Can you recall?
Coco Joe, Lose Your Money. The Mixtures together, one of the background purposes was to be able to, you know, not only travel around Australia with that, groups like the Animals and do a tour around Australia, but go and do the tours overseas. Well, Ken Brodziak, who ran Aztec Services and brought out the Beatles, called me into his office one day and said, Laurie, how would you like to tour overseas? I've got the contacts to get you overseas. I said, that'd be great, Ken. And he said, but you've got to do one thing. You've got to get John off the drums and out the front and get a new drummer. I said, well, okay, I'll see if I can get that happening. So John was still a teenager. And I noticed before when other people that I knew, like, say, Graham Trotman, nicknamed Trotter from the Playboys, he was doing the daytime thing as one of the, not the original Mixtures, but that band that was working at 10th Avenue.
Right, yes.
So occasionally I said to Graham, you know, come and sit in with us. But when Graham sat in with us, John was very reluctant to be out the front. So I got Graham in to do just that and said, oh, John, we need to, you know, the three-part harmony, go out the front. When I told John that the real reason I got Graham in was that we got an offer from Ken Brodziak that if you be the front man, we can go overseas. And John said, no, I've got nothing to do with my hands. I don't want to be a front man.
No. Yeah. Can't take a trick.
Oh, well.
I mean, look, I can understand where he's coming from, but really your whole direction was to build a band up to get them overseas, wasn't it?
Well, I got them, with the connections I had from the Strangers, I got them up a number of legs without having to build up to good money, because we had the good equipment, I had the contacts, and that was successful, doing it that way, doing the country dances before we did the city dances, because they wouldn't pay the money in the city.
No.
It wasn't about money, but money provided better equipment, a better lifestyle, a good car, a good place to live.
Yes.
So money was important. But yeah, I did put the Mixtures together with the overview of doing some good things in Melbourne, touring with international artists around Australia, which we did, and then maybe going overseas.
So when John said no to the overseas, was that deflating?
Well, no. What I did then was I worked in partnership with an agency, and I decided to take myself out of the Mixtures and put a new lot together, which was with Mick Flynn and Fred from the Strangers and Idris, etc. That became the Recording Mixtures that did In the Summertime and Pushbike Song, which was an international hit. Where Rod de Klerk was drafted into the army, so I had to change the Mixtures anyway.
Because that was when during our involvement in Vietnam.
Exactly.
Yes.
I missed it because I was older. But Rod got drafted. I couldn't replace him with one person, so I replaced him with two. But I was managing him in Australia. But after a while, I got the playing bug again, so I got into a band called Bluestone with Terry Dean and John Creech.
Listen to older voices, where stories from the past find a home in the present.
I'm Rob Greaves and I'm talking with Laurie Arthur, and Laurie is recalling life after the Mixtures.
Were they the halcyon years for you in your musical career, that 20-year period from the from the late 50s through into the 70s. Was that the best years for you for music?
It was the best years for anyone at that time.
Yes.
Because we were playing the music we liked. We didn't have to worry about money.
And there were so many live venues, wasn't there, during that period?
Oh, yeah.
They were everywhere.
You could work 7 nights a week, which we did.
Our time is nearly up, so I think that leads us possibly into a bit of a discussion to get your thoughts on a few other things. For instance, the state of the Australian music industry at the moment. How do you see Australian music as it is now?
Well, rap to me is crap. Not music in the sense of there's music behind it, but it's not appealing to myself.
But what about the state of play for young Australian musicians? They don't seem to have the opportunities that you and your colleagues had. We've said that the live venues aren't there now. How much Australian music gets played on the air?
Not a lot. In meeting younger musicians, there's a trend that they're in multiple bands. Back in my day, you played in one band and that was it.
Mm.
But when I put some freelance things together, I've noticed, oh, hang on, I don't know whether I'm playing with Dada or Dado or, you know, they're playing in multiple bands.
Is that to exist?
It still exists now.
No, I mean, are they having to do that because that's the only way they can make a living is to, you know, have multiple bands going?
Yes, to me it is, yes. Yeah. And probably working out if one band takes off, that's the direction I'll go in. Yeah, multiple bands is not something that used to occur years and years ago.
Would you agree that one of the strengths of the music in the 60s and 70s was that the artists themselves had direct involvement in terms of the music that was being played, that, like, for instance, you demanded your stuff is played. So the recording processes, you had the stand, the mans that you could go to help with the promotion. None of that seems to exist now. It seems to be in the hands of the bankers and
the recording executives.
Executives, yeah. not even the engineers, the executives, yes.
Yeah, well, you know, in the old days you used to be able to submit a tape to get a recording contract. These days you virtually got to be able to present a video as well as a recording or video of the recording. It's a lot more business orientated now. If you were a good artist in the old days, you'd be offered a recording contract. Like I said, these days you've got to have the full package.
Mm.
Video, promotion, the whole lot.
The last person I interviewed was Anita Monk, who ran the very successful Rockdown TV series and now has Rockdown Radio. And she made a point that I want to get your comment on. She said that during the 70s, when she was in bands and singing, she said there would often be, at any given venue, you'd have your top line act, you'd have a band that was really close to making it, and then you would have a band, you know, a group of musicians who had formed
support
a band. Yeah, support band who were just, you know, finding their way. And one of the advantages of that system was that the support band could watch the top line act and even the act that was about to make it and learn from them about presentation and how they interacted with themselves and the audiences. Those venues don't exist now, those mechanisms. So how do young bands learn their craft in terms of the performance side of it, not just the musicianship? And she said she thinks that's one of the reasons why Australian music is suffering. Would you agree with that, or do you have a different perspective?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. There aren't the opportunities around now, or there's more people vying for those opportunities. Back in my days, if you worked on your songs and worked on your presentation, like within The Strangers, like at Country Dances, we had a friend of mine who would these days be called a tour manager. And like, for instance, again, when we go to Colac, we had a roadie setting up in the afternoon, we'd do a sound check, but he'd be running around the town trying to find a restaurant open after 12.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't happen, so he'd have to bribe him. But one of his other duties was that he would announce us, we'd have the curtains closed, he'd go out the front, and coming on stage is The Strangers, let's hear it from him. No, not louder, whatever. You know, rev the crowd
up. A theatre.
Reb the Crowder.
Yes, yes.
And he was a natural at that. Mm. So we used to have that at all the country dances that we did.
Mm.
And getting, not only do you have to get an audience in your hometown like Melbourne, but it helps to get people wanting you to come back to Colac, Shepparton, Warrnambool, Echuca, Wodonga, whatever, the whole lot. So we used to reserve Saturday nights to going around all the major country towns on a Saturday. And on Fridays and Thursdays, etc., we would have sort of regular gigs at different venues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we'd specifically keep Saturday nights open to go around the country, or country Victoria. And that was a good thing, because playing all night doesn't give you an opportunity to do a lot of presentation. But doing a spot where you've got the headlining name, like the Mixtures of Colac, or the Mixtures of Wodonga or something, where you just go out and do your spot, it's different than playing all night at a gig or a hotel.
Listen to older voices, the magic of memories.
You mentioned hotels, that leads me to another thing. From the mid-70s onwards, a lot of the disco-type venues like the Thumping Tum, places like that, were closing down, and the pub rock scene took off. You know, lots of bands were getting gigs in hotels.
Well, that's true. When I started, though, there weren't any hotel gigs.
Mm.
There was 6 o'clock closing.
Oh, yes, when you started, yes.
So it was dancers first.
Yes.
Then it became hotels and discos. And there was a period there that for every hotel that was big enough to hold entertainment, say, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that's enough work for a band that could be full-time. And if you look at the number of venues that have closed down entertainment and they've got poker machines, etc. I mean, Melbourne in my day could support really about 50 full-time bands.
There was a period when Melbourne really could put its hand up as being one of the top 5 live music cities in the world. It was huge, wasn't it? It was big. It's no longer like that. But then again, nowhere in Australia is. It seems to me that we don't value our musicians the way we should. I mean, if you go to the States, even if you don't go to the States, even if you just look at the history of music in the States, musicians as they age are not just venerated, they're encouraged to keep going. That, you know, people didn't turn their backs on Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf because they turned 70. Here, we have a lot of musicians who are now aging, but their skill and their craft is as strong as it ever was. You know, the Mick Hamiltons, the Bob Brights, the people you've spoken of, yet they're struggling to get heard.
Well, aren't the venues to employ them? That's what I said about for every hotel that's big enough to have poker machines, in my day, was big enough to support a band, one band.
Yes.
And there just aren't the venues like that around. More jobs means more work, more emphasis on getting things better so that you've got to leave people with the idea, oh, I had a great night tonight, I'm going to go and see that band again.
Yeah.
Or that artist. But there just aren't the number of venues around, although they're still around, but they're predominantly poker machines.
And where they're not tied up with poker machines, they're part of this gentrification issue where all of a sudden you get these people moving into where the hotels are and saying, the noise. Shut the hotels down with the music because the noise is there. We don't want the noise. And that's been a story right throughout Melbourne. So there's a whole range of issues going on here. And I suspect it concerns you as to where we're going to be going in the future then with our music, because music in some way is the soul of a nation. If we're not providing live music, where is that going to take us?
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices, promoting positive ageing.
I've had a bugbear with, I don't want to be critical, but the way music's taught and has been taught in schools for years is backwards.
What do you mean?
The academic way of learning is to learn to read, write, and play all at the same time. Whereas even talking our own language, we all learned to talk before we could read and write. And we learned phonetically from our parents by copying words. Well, I could demonstrate with my guitar. Well, we all learned to talk by copying sounds from our parents. And music is a language. It can be spoken as in played, written and read. But again, I emphasize, we all learn to talk by copying our parents. My guitar was my first parent. So if you play it, that's actually a D string, and copy it, da da, and make patterns, da 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 da. Then if you learn to copy scales and exercise and that throughout your whole guitar, you can end up. Just like talking on your guitar. Even your bends, etc. So you're playing what you think, but you're not learning to read and write. We all learn to talk by copying our parents vocally. And if you were to learn another language like French or something, or make it with Japanese, we had to learn all the hieroglyphics to read and all that. It's not the way in music.
It's not a natural way of learning, really.
No.
No.
So if you learn your instrument by copying it, and you learn to think in the language of guitar or bass or whatever it is. A little bit harder with saxes and that, but that's the way music should be taught, and it's not.
Laurie, our time is up, and I couldn't think of a better way of ending a conversation that we've had than with your words. I think they are very wise words, and I would encourage all the young guys out there who might be listening to this to pick up on that and pick up the guitar and just
copy scales and exercises and little riff ideas and then spread it out across your guitar.
Laurie, thank you very much for being on Listen to Older Voices, the Baby Boomers. It's been a wonderful experience for us.
Thanks a lot.
We'll finish up now with a well-known track recorded by The Mixtures whilst Laurie was their manager.
What you can find. If a daddy's rich, take her out for a meal. If a daddy's poor, just do what you feel. It's too long, but late. Do a tunnel or return at 25. When the sun goes down, you can make it good and really fine. We're all friendly, we love daddy, well I mean, we love everybody, cause we do as we please. When the weather's fine, go fishing or go swimming in the sea. We're always happy, life we're living, yeah, that's our philosophy. Sing along with us, dee 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 dee, da dee da da da, yeah, we're happy, happy. Da da da, dee dee da 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 da. Maybe we settle down. If she's rich, if she's nice, bring your friends and we'll all go into town.
what you can find. Sing along with us, dee 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 dee, da 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 da, yeah, we're happy.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.